Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 93-year-old Turk Eliadis of Bakersfield, California, originally from McGill, Nevada, but from November 1944 until the end of April of 45, a guest of the Gestapo, as they say, a prisoner of war in Germany. And when we left off, Turk, they were transporting you via an old 40-8 boxcar to Stalag Luft 1 in Barth on the Baltic.
They would not let us off the train. I mean, it got to the point where we needed water and people had to go to the John. They wouldn't let us get off the train because they were afraid if they did, we'd take off, you know.
So that's when you go in a helmet and pass it to the window or what?
The only thing I remember is I had to urinate and there was a place where you did. It was terrible. And we were there all the time until we got to Barth.
And you were probably pretty cramped in there,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, we were cramped, and they just were scared that if they let us off, we'd take off. And I can understand how they feel, but it wasn't very good. And I don't remember how many hours it must have taken for that train to go from where we were interrogated to the camp itself.
And you're a 21-year-old kid, and you don't know how long this war is going to go. You don't know what it is like to be a prisoner, but now you end up in this prison camp. Were you afraid? Did you have any expectation of what was going to happen?
No, I don't think so. I don't even remember being afraid of a situation. There were just a bunch of other people that were there. No one ever mentioned that there was something, they had done something that was, you know, beat somebody or something like that. It was unbelievable. It was just, I can't say that like I was on vacation somewhere. That's about what it was. But you know, we moved around in the compound. Some people set up a volleyball deal. They played volleyball. I played softball. And then I come to find out that there was a couple of guys in there from McGill, Nevada.
Wow.
They were on bombers and so on. We were in compound 3. They were in compound 1 or 2. I don't remember which one. But I had a chance to go and visit with them. If you signed up and you wanted to go visit, you could.
Well, speaking of McGill, what about your mom? Did she have any idea what had happened to you? Did she know where you were?
When she first heard, all she got was missing in action. Then, I don't remember whether it was several weeks or a month or so on, the Red Cross was giving names of people that were in prison. Then, somebody there had contacted my mom that I was in prison camp. And that's when the first time that they knew I hadn't been killed, that I was in prison camp. I didn't talk about living, sleeping on straw mattresses and so on.
Give us, because most people have never and will never experience being a prisoner of war, especially in a German POW camp in World War II. What was that day-to-day like? I can't imagine it was very luxurious.
Well, the first thing we did, everybody had to get out in the compound, and they had to take a count. And sometimes they had trouble getting the correct count. Well, if you were an individual standing out there and you had to go to the bathroom and they kept waiting and kept, it got kind of bad. That was about the worst part that I could think of. We had to go out. Sometimes the count came up perfectly. Then there was a mad rush for the bathroom, you know, and so on.
I can't talk to an ex-prisoner of war without asking about the menu, the cuisine. What did you have to eat for those months there at Stalag Luft 1?
Okay, the main thing was bread. We had bread every day. Then we had kind of a stew where the meat was horse meat and so on. I know that with Butkereit, we were lucky because he could speak German. He would negotiate fresh eggs and stuff like that.
Wow.
But with the packages themselves, boy, they had coffee in there and they had powdered milk. You could mix it with water. Then towards the end, month or so, they quit coming. You know, you don't go around and ask, when are we going to get our parcels? You're in prison. Shut your mouth and just wait. The big bartering agent was cigarettes. I didn't care for cigarettes.
That made you a rich man, didn't it?
Oh, wait, I tell you. We got in a bridge game. Sam, the guy that flew the 47s, He and I were partners. And the way you got in, I think you put up two or three packages of cigarettes.
So when the Red Cross would send powdered milk and chocolate bars and all these other things, they'd also send you cigarettes.
That's right.
But you didn't smoke.
No, I didn't smoke at all. So you put up so many packages of cigarettes. And if you won, you won all the cigarettes. Well, he and I got in this tournament. And we won the darn thing. And I can't tell you how many packages of cigarettes we had. We were rich. I mean, if you wanted something, up on the board, they say, okay, for three packages of cigarettes, we'll give you this. For so-and-so packages, we'll give you this. I guess we were in hog heaven. I don't know.
Now, there's a great story about the liberation of that camp because the Russians were coming. And instead of the Germans staying at the camp until the Russians got there, which was the plan, the ranking American, a fighter ace named Hub Zemke, negotiated with them to evacuate the camp. That's why when you guys woke up, you saw Americans in the towers instead of Germans in the towers.
Yeah.
I guess they didn't want to tell anybody ahead of time, but they had negotiated that with the Germans, and the thought was that's going to save a lot of lives.
Yeah, I think the Germans wanted to get the hell out of there.
They didn't want to deal with the Russians.
Oh, my. I the fear was terrible.
Did you know it was coming? Did you know that that Liberation Day was approaching?
Oh, yeah, we knew they were coming, but we didn't know exactly what day it would be.
Uh-huh.
But we knew the Russians were coming. The situation got so bad in town. German people came from the town, came to the prison, and asked for protection from the Russians.
Right. I have to imagine that there was a different atmosphere around the camp
in those few days.
Oh,
there's no doubt about it. You know, the Americans were up there. We could leave the camp. They said, maybe it'd be better if you just stay in camp. It'd be, you know, you have no problem. I remember Gus and I and some others, we got out and walked around. What I was hoping, I could find some guy who was fishing so I could borrow his pole. I wanted to fish and so on. I loved to fish and so on.
Did you lose any weight while you were there?
Yeah, lost weight. That's the only thing, I lost some weight.
How much?
Probably in the neighborhood of 15, 18 pounds, probably.
Not bad compared to some others I've heard.
I know some people, it was really a problem. I don't know why some people couldn't handle the food. I don't know why. I really loved the bread. I thought it was great. It was different.
With sawdust baked into it and all that?
Well, there's no doubt about it. When you cut a slice and you look at it, you have a feeling that there's some ingredients in there that you're not quite sure of.
But it kept you alive.
Oh, yeah.
So the camp's liberated, but you guys are still there. And I'm sure there's a little bit of, well, what's going to happen next? And then they fly some bombers in to pick
you
up?
They flew B-17s. It wasn't right away. It was a couple of weeks. Supposedly, can you imagine this? We had to get permission from the Russians to fly bombers in here. That's what they were telling us. But B-17s, then I don't remember how many we put on there, but I remember I was right up in front. We flew to Lucky Strike, which was in France, and then it was there that Leslie and I, we went somewhere and got on an airplane, flew back to the base, and went back to our outfit and visited with guys, you know, that we knew and everything else.
Did some of those guys still think you were dead?
Yeah, well, they didn't know that we were in prison. When I got back, there were several of the planes got shot down, and they thought I got killed. They didn't have any idea. You know, I have a feeling that what's happened, after I had communicated with the head guy and said, are you sure we are in friendly territory, I have a feeling that somebody might have called me. And I didn't answer. That's probably what happened.
So that would explain why they thought you were gone.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But when they reported it to my mother, that's all they said, missing in action. That's all they said.
So when you actually got back to the States and got to go see your mother again,
yeah,
what was that like?
Well, Mom was beside herself. I remember we got to Salt Lake City. We went to one of the bases there. They gave us all our back pay and all that and so on. And then I took a bus from Salt Lake to McGill. Of course, everyone was happy and all that. Now I'm sitting here talking with you. I look back on those days because now I think about those days and so on and what it was like. The things that happened to me before I ever got to the prison camp. Now that I think about it, if those two guards hadn't been with me, I don't know what would have happened. Some German comes up and wham. You think they're going to make a big issue out of it if you're an American? Yeah, none at all.
And I'm thinking of everything that's happened for you in the last 70 years. I mean, you survive your engine quitting in this P-51 and having to bring it down in France. You survive getting shot down, being taken prisoner, 5 months in a POW camp, getting back home. You go back to school. You play college football again at the University of Nevada.
Yeah.
You become a coach, 32 years here at North High School. Some of your guys went on to play in the NFL. So many more are coaching and impacting other young lives.
Yeah.
You never would have met your wife at the University of Nevada. You wouldn't have your kids, your grandkids.
No, I met her after I got back from the service.
So, I mean, look at all those things that wouldn't have happened if those German guards weren't with you, if any number of these things. How do you explain all that?
The only thing that I can think of, and there are people that believe in it. My neighbor is very religious. You know, I've never been very strong in that area. I know that when I was a youngster, we went to church every Sunday, every Sunday. That was never a problem. And I remember when I knew that I was going to go, we had finished our training at Phoenix, Arizona. We were commissioned. Mom insisted that I go and have the Greek priest talk over me. I didn't go once. I went a couple times. Got to go. I'm not going to argue with Mom if that's what you want me to do. When my dad got killed, I told you the amount of time that I spent with Coach Bledsoe. When I came back from the service, I found out that Coach Bledsoe had left White Pine High School and taken a job at Shafter. When I finished at the University of Nevada, I went to USC to get my master's in education. And on Friday nights, I'd come up and watch the football games. It happened to be that the principal that was going to take North High School was the principal at Shafter. Dan says to me, he says, you know, you got a job here. Once you're finished down there, I coached the JVs. Dan had the varsity. The plans were Coach Bledsoe was going to come to North High School and be the head football coach and a counselor, as he was like there in Shafter. Dan comes to me one day and he says, you better apply for the North High job. My wife doesn't want to go to Bakersfield. And that's how I applied for the job. We opened the school in 1953, and I retired in 85. So I was there a few years.
And in many ways, I know you still are. And I'm sure we could go on for a long time, but I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a little bit about it. Is there anything that we didn't hit on that you think is important for people to know about World War II and the things you did, the guys you served with?
You know, when you're young and you're 21 years old, I think a lot of times you think you're indestructible, you know. Once I got over there and we were flying those missions and we were losing people. Every time we went on a mission and we did strafing and things like that, we were losing two or three people every day, you know. You know, I think back on, you know, being over there, the chances of getting killed, who knows?
Who knows? So many possibilities. What we do know is Turk has quite a story, and we're so glad he shared it here. There's a little more that he had to say that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time, but you will find it in the extended podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, encouraging you to remember, as Turk's prisoner of war story underscored again today, that freedom is not free.